Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens. So are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Pesaran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Jennifer Harper from Decoherence Media. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me on.
I guess just to begin with, could you tell us a little bit about your history and what sort of led you to founding Decoherence Media?
So I started off researching far-right extremism as a hobby, as a lot of researchers do, and also how Tristan got into it as well. And let's see, I think it was about 2019, I had decided to join Jake Hanrahan's Discord server, and I virtually met Tristan Lee in the server, and by coincidence we discovered we both kind of did this as a hobby, and over the years we just started to collaborate more and more, and it grew out of becoming a hobby into our jobs. And then I think it was this spring, about March, April, Tristan brought up the idea of forming our own investigative independent news outlet. And we just went for it. And so we've been working really hard since April just to get the organization up and running, in addition to our regular kind of research loads. But that's kind of how we started.
Your first story, or the first stories that you've released, are about the website Iron March and a corresponding website, Rope Culture. Could you tell us a little bit about what those websites were and what purpose they served within the fascist ecosystem?
So most people who dive into far-right extremism know about Iron March. Iron March was a really central website for neo-Nazis to come together, share ideas, meet one another, and start organizing on. So Iron March was formed around 2011, and it got off the ground by a Russian named Alisher Mokhidinov, who also started Rope Culture. And so, yeah, Iron March was just this huge forum where Nazis could join, post messages, reply to each other. And I think it was November 2019, the server files got leaked and was pushed into the public eye. And so Iron March was up and running for many years. And then about at the end of 2015, the idea came up to create a zine, a Nazi zine, an electronic zine, and it ultimately was called Noose, like a rope that you would tie and hang someone or something on. Noose was the name of the electronic zine that was put together and hosted on the website called Rope Culture. So Rope Culture is basically a website that hosted the e-zine called Noose. And all of this was very fundamental to the rise of neo-Nazism. And out of it, out of these websites and forums and private messages and emails and essays and threads, many neo-Nazi organizations formed. And out of all of this is what we come to understand as neo-Nazi accelerationism, finding its roots here in the Iron March Forum. And so to be able to look at all the files and all the information stored in these files just really cracks open the safe of Nazism and the formation of it during this time, and just gives us so much information: who was involved, where, when, what they were doing, what they were saying, who they met. Very revealing.
One of the interesting things about the rope culture data that you feature on the site is this is all material that was included in the original leak of Iron March content from 2019. It seems that nobody really noticed it for 6 years. Could you tell us a little bit about how you found it and how you realized the significance of it?
Tristan's strengths are more, well, he's a data scientist. I think his specialty is computational physics. And so one day, quite after the time that the Iron March server was leaked, like, you know, like a year or two later, we're just chatting and he was like, hey, by the way, you know, there's this other file. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? It's like, yeah, rope culture, like go here, go look at this. And inside this file is actually the whole entire rope culture website, including personal emails and the actual content of the emails and the attachments to emails back and forth from the admin of the rope culture website. And it's just sitting here in all the Iron March stuff. And I was like, what? So I went and checked my own folder and looked inside. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that is in there, which is really crazy. My guess, and I would be really interested if anyone did find this and look into it at the time. But my guess was that at the time Iron March was leaked, that people were like, there was just a saturation of information. Like nobody could keep up, right? It's just like email, name, ID. And I think there's just a saturation of information that people looking at all the files had to prioritize, you know, what was the most valuable, the high value files in relationship to how much time you have to look at the stuff. And so I'm guessing this whole rope culture bundle just kind of sank to the bottom of that priority list. But it is also, it is so revealing of what specifically Alisher Mukhidinov was up to, Gabriel Chapeau, and, you know, how much control they had over the influence of the propaganda that was being disseminated through Noose, through rope culture, through Iron March. These figures really were just pumping out books, articles, essays at an amazing rate. And specifically, Fisher was posting like tons all day, every day. And yeah, these are just gems for researchers digging into the stuff, because it's all there. It's, you know, laid out for you who managed the site, who wrote in, how they decided what to publish. Very, very eye-opening stuff.
Jennifer, there's been a lot of concern expressed about the way in which Nazis in particular have been attempting to recruit and to groom young men into these circles and organisations. What do you think rape culture and so on reveals about the kinds of strategies and tactics that are employed in order to, I guess, bring these young people into their orbit?
Well, the direct messages in Iron March are most revealing because we can see who are the recruiters, you know, in private messages. Well, you'll get some of that stuff in public-facing posts and articles, but it's in the private messages and in the private emails that you can really see who is doing the recruiting and who is looking to join. And you can kind of point your finger at who has leadership in what groups. And then there also seems to be a certain degree of, I guess you could call it peer pressure from Nazis to newcomers. In fact, when new people first joined Iron March, it was a custom for seasoned members to bully the new ones. And so I think outward facing, you see a sort of pressure or challenge from some people to others to do more for the neo-Nazi cause. A level of pressure to act and to do something. And then more privately, you can see the recruiters. For example, Adam Waffen Division, you pick up on the messages on who is cold messaging others. Hey, you know, have you thought about joining this group? Yeah, those are some of the top ones I've seen.
Jennifer, a criticism that is sometimes leveled at open source investigators is that they don't always adhere to some of the conventions of journalism. I'll say one convention of journalism that you have been adhering to on Decoherence Media is reaching out to everyone for comment. I was not surprised to see you didn't get a reply back from some people like Brandon Russell from Adam Waffen. I was surprised that you got a comment back from a guy called Wesley Gilreath, who's currently serving 15 years, who did tell you the word fascist is overused to an extreme degree in America. Do you agree with his suggestion there that this is a guy currently serving 15 years who had posted a hunter's guide online targeting mosques and synagogues? Are you being unfair calling him a fascist?
I think it's pretty accurate to describe him that way. And to be clear, he's not serving prison time for being a fascist. He's serving prison time for having child sex abuse material on his phone. Is the term overused? I can see where it can be overused. And I do think it has been overused at times. But speaking as a citizen and resident of the U.S., I think the creeping fascist is already here. And so I think it may have been uncomfortable for some people to use that word a few years ago. But right now, I think we need to be more comfortable and accurately describe environments and governments and people accurately. And so I actually, in reflection of the political climate now, I think we need to have more confidence in using the term where appropriate. And, you know, I understand why some people think it has been overused, but
you're on the openly fascist website.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think some people want to have a distinction between racism and fascism and Nazism. But we just need to be careful in describing things accurately and and so people can, you know, become more comfortable using the word where needed and and not have others excuse it away.
Jennifer, one of the groups that formed on Iron March was Antipodean Resistance in Australia. That group has dissolved, but a number of its members have joined another group, which is very active at the moment, the National Socialist Network. What do you think, or what is the relationship, do you think, between the more secretive and clandestine groups like AR and so on, and the, I guess, the shift, it seems, towards more open and public espousal of essentially the same doctrines?
Am I understanding you correctly? You're noticing a shift from more clandestine private groups to more open and public-facing groups?
Yeah, and I guess, is it the case that many of those who are now engaged in more public forms of activism often find their kind of way to that through these sorts of sites? And what do you think it says, I guess, about the general political context? Because it seems like 5 to 10 years ago, a lot of this activity was principally online in particular websites. It seems now that there's been an acceleration, it hasn't just been in terms of the forms of action these groups have taken or may take, but I guess the political conditions seem to be more open to the, you know, as in the US, in Australia, the more open and free espousal. There's no longer perhaps as much need for these people to hide their political commitments.
Yes, I've definitely been watching this trend as well. And, you know, one reason that this may be occurring is that bigoted and racist and sexist, ableist, fascist behavior seems to be becoming normalized by political figures, leaders in our communities. There seems to be a really drastic increase in elements of this ideology being normalized in everyday media behavior. And I think that makes neo-Nazis and fascists more comfortable and emboldened. For example, in the US, when the president is actually referring to a racist organization like the Proud Boys, telling them to stand by, you know, that is normalizing a huge contingency of far-right extremists. And so that lowers the risk of some of these members in these groups, lowers the risks of individuals who may not even be in a group, just, you know, individual actors. And, you know, we find a lot of far-right extremists who commit some sort of terror attack and they're not even part of a group. So not just group members, but also individuals, when they see their harmful thoughts being normalized in the news by community leaders, political figures, then I think they don't see any reason why they have to keep their ideology and aims quiet. They can more openly talk about it. And that's how it can spread really fast, because you don't have to be careful and conceal things. You can do it openly. You can do it openly. You can commit crimes openly and not be penalized. Yeah. And so now you don't see everyone masked or using a fake name because they're more comfortable, because they see it reflected in the world around them.
Jennifer, one of the things that you found on the Rope Culture database was a series of articles describing how people got in to the ideology. Could you tell us a little bit about the insights that you could gain from, I guess, the psychological profile of some of these people from that content?
Yeah, those were exceptionally interesting to me. They were called 1488 Confessions, and basically people were invited to write up how they came to Nazism and submit it by email to Rope Culture. And then the editors would decide whether or not to publish it or not. They didn't all get published, but these were quite intimate essays from individuals, all of which are available on the FasciLeaks website. And yes, it was very interesting to read about the experiences, and I did find some commonality among even just these few confessions, but also I have seen some of the same reasons and elements echoed in other areas of my research. So going through them, and I talked about this with Dr. Peter Simi at Chapman University, who we cited in our article, that highlighted the 1488 confessions section. A lot of issues within the home, family dynamics not being incredibly healthy, you know, a level of neglect or abuse, individuals not feeling like they have any purpose in life, and one way or another came across Nazism. Like one of them described finding Mein Kampf in, I think it was their uncle's cabin, and reading it. So, you know, some could have an influence from another family member who shares a similar ideology. There's also been instances of addiction and then turning, this sounds weird, but turning to Nazism to help cure addictions. And in very young people, it's mostly younger males, young men, older teenagers, and needing to find direction and dealing with lots of conflict and negativity around them in their daily environment. All of these together seems to be a thread that I'm seeing.
Jennifer, we've recently witnessed the Trump administration declare war on anti-fascism, or Antifa, as it's known, in the United States. Your work and that of others investigates fascist ideologies and movements from, an oppositional perspective. Do you have any comments to make about that newly declared war? And do you have concerns about the ways in which it might impact upon those who are trying to monitor, to investigate, and to expose some of these groups and movements?
My understanding is that although Trump has declared war on Antifa, that he doesn't actually understand what it is he's declared war on. The climate is very hostile, and we've seen racists and homophobes get into great positions of power. So it is quite frightening. The government and Trump and the government and law enforcement in general don't seem to understand what Antifa is and what it isn't, does not grasp the concept of anti-fascism, and seems to be targeting their opposition, which is largely folks who are anti-fascist, which means you're against racism, you're against fascism, you're against Nazism, you're for human rights, you're for egalitarianism. So it is quite a scary thing for people who are trying to advocate for marginalized people. And we've seen crackdowns on anti-fascists for years now, and now it's starting to increase. And it seems like a catch-all excuse to arrest anybody you don't like, or arrest anyone and demonize anyone who says something you don't like, or that, just like we see ICE targeting anyone who has dark skin, whether they're a citizen of this country or not. So, yes, it is quite concerning, and it's something we're being very mindful of in our research and in our work and in our publishing. We have tried to safeguard our work as journalists on a platform that focuses on far-right extremism by engaging several law firms. We have quite a large legal crew. And so it's definitely something we are keeping in mind. And we are worried about what's going to happen in general. We don't want to see the press stifled. You know, Fox News is on the forefront of the media. Like, anything you turn on, anything I turn on, I'm getting an increase in less than reputable outlets and even far right news hosts. So we do want to try to keep the information flowing. And we have probably a dozen investigations in the queue. We'll also be publishing other journalists' works as well. So yes, we are very concerned, and we're going to be very careful and try our best to keep doing what we want to do.
Well, Jennifer, we'll have to leave it there. If people want to see that reporting, they can find it at decoherence.media. And there is a sister site, fascileaks.com, if people want to dig into the archives that you've uncovered. Yes. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, nice chatting with you.
That is our program. We'll see you next week.
We will. See you then.
Hello there. I'm Virginia from The Gardening Show. What if there was a viable solution to climate change? Treasured Perennials Nursery are sponsoring a screening of Kiss the Ground documentary, exploring how, through our soils, we can stabilise the Earth's climate, restore lost ecosystems, and provide future food security. A mini event with stalls, demonstrations and a Q&A session. It's going to be at Ferny Creek Horticultural Society, which is in Hilton Road in Sassafras, on November the 15th, 11:30 to 4 p.m. Tickets will be $15.50 through TryBooking. Head to trybooking.com and search for Kiss the Ground. All proceeds, of course, are donated to 3CR. Treasured Perennials Nursery is a 3CR supporter and regularly appear on The Gardening Show.
Kefirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kefirs.org.au. That's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.